The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 368, called Holly Abel. This episode is brought to you by Fertile. Fertile was created by Dr. Jen, a PhD biologist who lived infertility herself. After hitting roadblocks and being handed a loan application instead of answers, she built what she wished existed, the only sterile, FDA-cleared, at-home insemination kit. Fertile places sperm right at the cervical opening, 1 inch lower than an IUI, with no meds, no prescriptions, and no appointments. The kit includes 3 sterile attempts to time with your cycle. It's as easy to use as a tampon, US made, IVF grade, and HSA, FSA eligible, and it ships discreetly. If you're exhausted, budget stretched, or just want to try something that feels private and empowering, this could be your why not moment. For LGBTQIA+ families, solo parents by choice, or anybody navigating unexplained infertility. So here's what to do. Go to fertile.com today, that's P-H-E-R-D-A-L.com, and use code INFERTILEAF for $10 off. That's fertile, pronounced fertile, but spelled with a PhD out of spite. They told Dr. Jen she wouldn't be a mother, and she used her PhD to prove them wrong. Again, that's P-H-E-R-D-A-L.com with code INFERTILEAF. Thanks, Fertile. This episode is brought to you by Belly. Are you thinking about growing your family? Whether you're just starting to plan or are actively trying to conceive, preconception health is key. That's where Belly comes in. Belly has vitamins to help both women and men optimize their health before pregnancy. With essential nutrients like folate, iodine, and zinc, Belly ensures your body is ready for this exciting next step. Belly goes beyond basic vitamins. Their unique formula supports reproductive health, hormone balance, and fertility, all while being made with the highest quality ingredients. Plus, Belly is created with only clean ingredients so that you can rest assured that you are making a safe choice for you and your future little one. When it comes to starting your family, take the first step with Belly. Give yourself and your future baby the best foundation for a healthy start. Visit bellybaby.com today and use code IAF15 for 15% off your first order. That's bellybaby.com, B-E-L-I-B-A-B-Y, for a healthier tomorrow. Belly Baby, because healthy beginnings start here. Thanks, Belly. Before we get started, I want to tell you about something really close to my heart. If you're navigating infertility, IVF, IUI, donor conception, embryo donation, solo parenting by choice, same-sex family building, or trying to explain all of this to the little people in your life, my Work of Art children's book series was created exactly for that. There's Work of Art, Beautiful Bird, and the board book, You Are a Work of Art. And right now you can get the full 3-book bundle for just $49, originally $79. And book number 4 is in the works, and I cannot wait to tell you guys more very soon. This one is going to be very, very special. Head to infertileafgroup.com to check out the books and grab the bundle, or check out my Instagram for more. You can also get the link there. It's infertileaf stories on IG. Thanks to everybody who supported the book so far, and I can't wait for you guys to see the next one. Again, it's infertileafgroup.com or go to my IG, infertileaf stories. Okay, today's episode is about endometriosis, infertility, medical trauma, and survival. My guest today, Holly Abel, started having debilitating periods at 11 years old and was told for decades that it was normal. It wasn't. In 2023, Holly was diagnosed with stage 4 endo affecting multiple organs. She miscarried, she had surgery, and after a routine HSG in early 2024, she developed an infection that no one recognized until she went into septic shock. She was given a 10% chance to live. A hysterectomy saved her life and ended her ability to carry children. But this convo isn't just about what happened to Holly. It's about what happened to her family who watched their world fall apart from a hospital chair. This is a story about loss and advocacy and listening to your body. And if you've ever felt brushed off by a doctor, this one's for you. Without further ado, this is Holly's infertility story. Hi, Holly. Thank you so much for doing this. It's so good to see you.
Thank you. You too.
So I would love to start with you when you were younger. So I know that around 11, you had really debilitating periods, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
So yeah, I got my first cycle when I was 11 and it made me sick. I would throw up, tummy troubles, fever, nausea, and the worst of it was I would pass out because there was so much blood. I would pass out. I couldn't tell you the number of times my parents found me. I know there was a really awkward time when I had taken a shower and I had passed out and my father found me.
Mm.
So that was awkward, but
that's so dangerous too. You could like slip and hit your head or, Okay. So you said that doctors weren't really listening to you and telling you this was normal or you were being dramatic. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I started, I think I was about 15, 16 when I started to go to my first gynecologist appointments, and they had put me on birth control for starters because they said, you know, she started her cycle, this is normal. And they said birth control would be, you know, the cure-all that would help not have it be so heavy, would help manage the symptoms. Never happened. I mean, really, nothing.
It never happened. Like you didn't go on the pill or it didn't
fix I went on the pill. It just, nothing got better.
Got it.
I mean, really nothing. I didn't see an improvement from anything. And I would
still
go,
passing out.
Oh yeah. Everything, all of it.
And when you mentioned that to the doctor, they just said that was normal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Yep. They didn't mention endometriosis or anything like that.
No. And I don't even think, you know, like we talk about mental health now, like it's more of a normal thing. I don't think back then we really knew a whole lot about it. I mean, this was what, over 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. I know my mom had endometriosis and PCOS, but I don't know that we really like connected the dots then. I knew a lot of women or a lot of girls, my friends, who had really bad periods. So okay. I think we just, you know, the doctor said that was that, and I went on the pill, but nothing changed. And I spent the next 15 plus years still trying to get answers, because even throughout high school, I mean, looking at my transcripts back, you can see that I would miss anywhere from 7 to 14 days a month.
Oh my God, that's wild.
I couldn't go to school. I couldn't function. I mean, it makes it hard when you feel as disgusting as you do.
Oh.
And it really continued like that. So by the time I got into my early 20s and I had moved around a lot between relationships and life and work and stuff, I moved around Washington a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I would just find new doctors. I would be like, this is what's going on. I need help. I've been on birth control for a set number of years. And again, it's like, they just, well, let's try this birth control then. Okay. But let's switch this brand. Or, you know, we have, now you can do the implants and the mm-hmm. implant in your arm. And it's like, let's just use birth control, but we'll try different ones because, oh, that one didn't work. Okay, so let's try this one.
I'm so surprised that nobody was mentioning endo to you, because like you said, this wasn't that long ago. You know, I feel like, yes, things were not being talked about as much, but 15 years ago, you know, it was kind of out there and people were talking about it a little bit. So I feel so sorry for you that, or like badly for you that the doctors weren't listening. Like, did you know in your gut, like something's going on here and like you're kind of begging them to listen?
Oh, 100%. I did mention it to one doctor. I don't want to be judgmental and say because it was a male doctor, because I had had male, female, you name it, I've had the doctors. And I had mentioned it to him because I actually had a friend that I worked with, and she had had the endometriosis surgery. And she's like, it sounds like you could have that. And I was like, I don't even know what that is, but okay. So I mentioned it to that doctor, and he said, no, it's normal that you're going through this. He gave me the same spiel. I was being dramatic. It's in my head. And he's like, we didn't get anything on your ultrasound. And I was like, so if you don't get anything, like, what's the next step for someone who might have this? And he said, it's surgery. And he's like, but it's a lot to go through for you. And then if you do it and you don't have it. So he ended up, you know, I guess as the kids say now, he gaslit me that it was better not to do it because it was probably just in my head. And you're going to go through all of this just to find out you're completely fine. And I was like, okay. And that was the last straw for me. I was like, okay, fine. No doctor wants to take me seriously. Because I even said, so can I, you know, request the surgery? And he said, you can, but you're not going to find anything.
Wow. I was like, okay. So sure about it.
Yeah. So I was like, if a doctor is going to tell me that it's not there, what's the point of fighting it or fighting for my health and my body?
That's just the worst feeling when you know something's wrong, no one's listening to you, and they start to make you feel like you're crazy, or, you know, that you're being dramatic or over the top. And it's just a really bad place to be. So, okay, you did get diagnosed finally with endo, right? In 2023. Yes. So not too long ago from now. Tell me about when that finally happened and how you felt.
So I got diagnosed early 2023, and I had finally found a doctor. I wasn't specifically like looking like, oh, I think I have endo. It was just, I was in a new relationship and we were very serious. And I had just stopped taking birth control when I was 31. And, you know, I just wanted to check on things because I knew he was going to be my forever. And I knew I wanted to have kids in the future. So I started going back to gynecologist appointments and just picked her. And I told her about my periods, and she finally was like, oh yeah, that's not normal. And I'm like, what?
Oh my God. To hear those words finally after so many years.
Yeah. And so she basically listened to everything I had to say. And we did, you know, the pelvic ultrasound, the vaginal ultrasound. And then when the results came back, I was actually at work. And I was a special education assistant at that point. And I don't usually like take extra breaks throughout the day. But I saw that, you know, the images came through, the email came through, all of it. I got the notification and I was like, yeah, so I'm just going to go take a break. I'm going to go use the bathroom and I'll be right back. And like, I'm sprinting down the hallway because I knew it was going to give me the news that I wanted, but didn't want at the same time. And so I went into the bathroom, locked the door, and I like opened it. And I read that I had a 9.1 centimeter endometrioma on my right ovary.
Wow.
And at first I was like, endometrioma, is that, that has to be the same thing as endometriosis, right? And yeah, of course I Googled endometrioma and I was like, oh my gosh, I have endometriosis. And then I opened up the email from my doctor that says, we found X number of cysts. There's more, you know, she rambled on about it and said, call me when you're off work. We need to set up a time for the consultation. We need to do surgery, all that good stuff. So I stood in the bathroom and I cried. I just cried. I had one really good best friend that I worked with. And I texted her and said, look, I know my breaks went a little bit longer. I need time. Cover for me if you can, because this is the news I've been waiting for. And I need a minute to process this.
Absolutely. And
I knew I probably shouldn't have opened the email at work, but it had been so long that I had been looking for answers. There was no way I was going to be able to wait 8 hours.
Right.
100%. To read that.
So they told you that your endo was stage four and it was covering a whole bunch of different, or it showed up in a lot of different organs and places in your body. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So we found that out after the endometriosis surgery. So in December of 2023, we had the surgery and she basically said, you have the worst case of endometriosis I've ever seen. Stage four.
Wow.
She jokingly said, you know, if there was a higher stage, I would give you that.
Yeah.
And she said, you have it on your lungs, kidneys, uterus, cervix, ovaries, appendix, and I think that's it. So
you had said in your email, your bladder, your liver.
Yes, bladder, liver.
So was that, that had been causing you pain like all over your body, right?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Yep. Okay. So then after the surgery, what happened?
After the surgery, I process. I knew I had endo. I guess I didn't realize it was that severe. I should have known it was that severe, being that I had been so sick for so long. But I processed it, did what I could to, you know, be healthy. We had just gotten married and I was being healthy and exercising and taking the time that I needed to recover because I wanted babies.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in this day and age, women are having babies into their 40s. But for me, I had always wanted to be a mom. So I started as soon as I had that surgery, hit the ground running. I'm going to be healthy, going to do this because I'm going to pop out those babies now that I had surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was it. And I did anything and everything the doctor said.
And then tell us about when you had the HSG. And can you explain to people who are listening in your own words, like what that is, why they said you should do it?
Yeah. So because my endo was so bad and we wanted to have the babies, we wanted to make sure that there was no endo anywhere else that may be tucked inside your fallopian tube. So the HSG, it's a dye procedure and it shoots dye into your fallopian tubes and it'll show them if there's anything blocking them because you need your fallopian tubes for babies, you know, the whole procedure of it. So we did the procedure. I was told because of my endo, it might be more painful for me if there was more endo that they couldn't get in the fallopian tubes.
Mm-hmm.
And but there was nothing. My fallopian tubes were clear and unblocked. But with the HSG procedure, which until everything happened, I didn't realize, they give you antibiotics beforehand, before the procedure, because there is, you know, like anything else, there is a chance that you could get an infection from something.
Right.
So I, you know, took the pills that I did. They tell you to wait a few days on trying to conceive, all of that. But we still weren't having any success. But the HSG procedure was the first way to go about figuring out where we go from here to have the babies. And then about 3 to 4 weeks after that, that was in March. So about the middle-ish of April, give or take.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. March includes International Women's Day, and I've been thinking a lot about the incredible women in this space, the ones navigating infertility, loss, IVF, endo, motherhood, childlessness, careers, partnerships, and still showing up for everyone else. Honestly, so many of you listening. Women carry so much. The appointments, the research, the emotional labor, the strong one role, the invisible mental load that rarely gets acknowledged. And while we celebrate strength, we also need spaces where women don't have to be strong. BetterHelp, the world's largest online therapy service, can be that space. A place to process, to set boundaries, to say the things you don't say out loud anywhere else. BetterHelp has over 30,000 licensed therapists and has served more than 6 million people globally. You fill out a short questionnaire and they match you with a therapist based on your needs and preferences. And if it's not the right fit, you can switch anytime. If you're listening to this, your emotional well-being matters. So find support and feel lighter in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Again, 10% off at BetterHelp.com. Thanks, BetterHelp.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent spent your life working for. My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Is when I really started to get sick. It started off as a cold, but I couldn't shake it. It was this lingering, I don't know, I can't explain it. It started off as a cold, but then it's like a cold turned into almost like pneumonia bronchitis, mm-hmm. but it wasn't pneumonia or bronchitis.
Right.
But then the severe pain, the fevers of 103, 104, I went to the doctor. I counted because I went back in my chart to see between going to the hospital, going to the emergency room, video appointments. I had 15 different appointments trying to figure out what was wrong with me because I was so sick. But it wasn't the flu. It wasn't pneumonia. It wasn't bronchitis. It wasn't COVID. It wasn't a cold. It wasn't a sinus infection. But each time I went, they just prescribed me more and more antibiotics and just say, well, you just have a really bad case of the flu.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, here we go again. It's like the endometriosis, just something different.
Right. That would have made me so infuriated. Again, it seems like they're not listening to you, right? Like you were really sick. And I know that you had written to me kind of a synopsis of what you went through. You said in early May 2024, your body crashed. So tell me what happened then.
So May 4th of 2024. At this point, I had been to the doctor so many times that my poor husband, it wasn't that he didn't believe me. I think we were all just so exhausted of going back and forth to the hospital. But on May 4th, 2024, at 3 a.m., I woke him up because I was in the worst pain I've ever experienced.
Mm.
I don't know how to explain it other than the fact I had actually texted my best friend at 3 a.m. and said, I'm going to die.
Oh my God.
And that's the only way that I can explain the pain, the nausea. I couldn't walk. Mm-hmm. I was both vomiting and had diarrhea. I had to crawl to the bathroom because that was the only, I don't want to say comfortable position, but only comfortable position
right.
to get there. So I didn't, make messes in the living room. And by the time it's like the pain just got worse and worse. And I was like, all right. So I called Kaiser, made an appointment for just a phone appointment, called and spoke to the nurse. And she's like, you got to come into the hospital. And I was like, I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
I was literally there less than 12 hours ago with this pain too.
Because
the pain started off minimal, but it's like it just got progressively worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, they sent me home and gave me more antibiotics. And she goes, this doesn't sound normal. You need to go now. I'm calling the emergency room. I'm letting them know what's going on. You're on your way. And I said, okay, I'll go get in the car. And she said, your husband's driving you. And I said, well, he's asleep. He's got to work. And she's mm-hmm. like, you can't drive. But I was afraid to wake up my husband and be like, okay, we got to go back to the hospital because we were just there less than 12 hours ago.
Right. Oh, wow.
And woke him up, got our kiddo in the car, my stepson, and he took me to the hospital.
Uh-huh.
And the security guys were not very kind because I was hobbling, bent over, just holding my stomach and everything, barely able to make it.
Wow.
And they're like, do you need a wheelchair? Are you okay? And I was like, do I look okay to you?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we don't know. And I said, yeah, I could use a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And at this Kaiser, they have it set up in three different areas. So you go, you check in, then they do your vitals, and then you get put in a room.
Mm-hmm.
And all I really remember, because everything is just so hazy, I remember I got checked in, they took my vitals, and I was rushed back to a room. I mean, rushed.
Yeah.
They stripped me of my clothes, put me in a gown, asked me question after question. And I was just like, I don't know. I've been sick. Mm-hmm. They're like, do you know what's going on? No, I don't. I said, it's just this pain.
Right.
excruciating, like I'm on fire, like someone's slicing me with a knife that's on fire.
Oh my gosh, you were in septic shock.
Yep, I was tachycardic. My blood pressure was, it was bad. It was like 50 over 80 or something like that. It was bad.
You said you were given a 10% chance to live.
Yep. So come to find out, the only thing that it could have been was the HSG procedure, that I was that one person that got an infection and it just never left. And
oh my gosh.
Because we went through where I had been, where I had worked, mm-hmm. what did I touch, what did mm-hmm. I eat? Mm-hmm. And that was the only thing that we could tie it back to was the HSG procedure.
Oh my gosh. So how long were you in the hospital?
About 3 weeks.
Okay. And were you conscious?
No, I was in a medically induced coma for a couple of days because I tried to pull out my breathing tube. So they had to put me out to keep that in because my lungs had collapsed.
Oh my God.
And so, I
were
couldn't...
you like intubated?
Mm-hmm. I was intubated.
Wow. How was your husband through all of this? This is so much.
It was rough on him. Honestly, it still is, because he feels like he should have listened to me more, or there was something else he could have do that we could have prevented me being in the hospital, which there's nothing he could do. But he did at one point be like, you're fine. You need to wait this out. And so I think he felt guilty that it was somehow his fault, even though it wasn't, because I mean, I've seen the pictures. Like the first few days especially are very hazy for me. I've suffered a lot of memory loss from this.
Wow.
But I've seen the pictures. I was on, I don't even know how many tubes and IVs and machines, because the doctor said, you know, prepare for the worst. She's not going to make it. There's no way that less than 10% survival rate with this. I was the last, just like endometriosis, I was the last stage of septic shock. Doctors didn't expect me to pull through.
Oh my God. But here you are. What happened next?
I had to recover. It was a long, hard process. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was in the hospital long, not just because of it was because of the sepsis, but what we found out was I got an E. coli infection from it. Mm-hmm. So basically what had happened, which it also ties into endo as well. Yay. Mm-hmm. I had an endometrioma that had the E. coli infection fester. So I had the cyst pop, and then it spilled out all the infection, which is then, that's how the sepsis got into my bloodstream.
Wow.
That's what the pain was. I had had a cyst rupture, and the sepsis was slowly, for those 12 or so hours that I had went to the hospital, came back. It was just circling in my bloodstream.
Okay.
So, wow. But also when they did the emergency surgery, they found out that all of my endometriosis that the doctor had removed less than 6 months prior had all grown back.
Wow. Endo is such a beast.
Yep. It all grew back. She said that it looked like she was never even in there in December, that there was so much. So we like had to take this a step at a time because there was so much infection. I had two drains on both sides of my hips. I had you can't really see it as much now, but I have a scar because I had an IV here on my neck too. But there was so much infection that we had to get rid of that my blood pressure would keep plummeting. And then my fevers would just go up and down. They go anywhere from, you know, 102 back down to normal, back up, back down. And they were afraid to send me home early because they couldn't get control of this infection. Because I probably lost 30 pounds in just, I don't even know, the couple of months of being sick, the sepsis, everything. Because I didn't have an appetite. Or if I did, I would throw it up. I couldn't even keep water down, kind of thing. And so I was severely dehydrated. So the first week was spent getting control of it. And then we did. But then, you know, because I lost so much muscle mass and my memory, I had to do physical therapy so I could, you know, kind of walk. I knew how to walk, but I couldn't take more than a step without getting exhausted. So it was like kind of teaching my body how to move again in a way. Mm-hmm. And they basically just kept me there for a couple extra weeks just to be sure.
Right.
Be sure I was okay. And we had 100% control of this. We managed it. And then I was able to go home. My husband took off, gosh, I don't know, a month or so of work.
Okay, so tell me what happened in July of 2024.
So because the doctors I had never seen this before. They've seen people in septic shock, but they've never seen like the endo, the E. coli, like they've never seen this process through. So I was kind of like their weird little case study that they would joke about, like, because we need to make sure that she's okay, but she still wants to have babies. So basically, we were just going to appointments, making sure there was still no E. coli, the sepsis was still gone. How's the endo still doing? Do I need to be on birth control? All of those things. Mm-hmm. And so, funnily enough, I was still sick after I got home. Still sick. Fevers, vomiting, all of it. And they're like, oh, that's just normal. You're recovering. And I'm like, no, we're not doing this again.
Yeah, exactly. We learned our lesson with that.
Not doing this again. And again, countless times we went to the doctor. They couldn't find anything. They said, your body's getting used to moving. Your body's getting used to eating again.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, fine, whatever. Well, then there was one day where again, pain. And I said, I want a hysterectomy. And they're like, you don't want a hysterectomy. You want to have babies. And I said, no, if you're telling me that the pain that I'm going through, because they said it's your endo, it's growing back. Like, okay, then I'm done. Like, mm-hmm. I will adopt in the future. I will whatever. I can't function anymore.
Yeah.
I need to be me again. I need to be a good wife. I need to be a good mom. I need to go to work. I mean, at this point, I had been off work, gosh, in and out for 2 months. Mm-hmm. And they were great. I cannot say enough about my boss. She was absolutely amazing. And I said, but I have to work. Like, I have a family to provide for. And if you're right. telling me this is my endo growing back and this is how life is going to be, I'm done. Like,
yeah,
hysterectomy, do it, get it all out, whatever.
Wow. There's a line in the email that you sent me that really stuck with me that, you know, you said losing my uterus saved me, but it also shattered the future I thought I would have. So what does your family building journey look like right now?
We had a surrogate. Our plan with the hysterectomy was to take the uterus, but leave the ovaries.
Okay.
We thought that might just delay the endo growing. So we'd have a chance to, you know, surrogate, freeze my eggs. We looked into so many options, but we did the surgery and basically they found out there was just so much endo. They didn't have a choice. They took everything. So when they took my uterus out, they found like a giant, like softball size black cyst that was still filled with the infection.
Wow.
And they didn't catch it because my uterus was tilted and it was hiding behind there.
Oh my God.
And it was attached to my uterus.
It's like a miracle that you're here right now, being able to share this story.
I feel
like there were so many points where it could have gone the other way.
So they took everything out, had to call my husband during surgery because the infection had spread more to my appendix and they were afraid my appendix would rupture. So they took everything, took basically any organs that I can live without, they took.
Wow. So they took your appendix, obviously.
Yep. Wiped clean, told me what happened. And they said that had I not come back in, you know, because I came in and then within 24 hours, I had had the hysterectomy. And they said, had I not come back in and that had ruptured, there'd be no getting me to the hospital. I would have died. And they said they had to take everything, cervix, uterus, ovaries. They told me about my appendix.
Okay.
I was like, okay. So again, having the surgery saved my life.
Right.
But it drastically shifted again because I wanted a surrogate. I wanted my eggs.
Yeah.
We were going to freeze my eggs. So right now, adoption in the future is still what I want.
Okay.
It's just having to 2026. I decided would be my healing year to have that ripped away from you. And I know it was my choice for the hysterectomy, but I wanted to be a good wife and I wanted to be a good mom for my stepson, you know?
And you wanted to be alive.
I wanted to be alive. And yeah. I did. I struggled. I went back and forth because they said, we can fix this, you know, we'll figure it out so you can still carry babies. And I was like, okay, but what are the odds that I would even survive anything like that? And they said, yeah, you probably wouldn't.
Oh my gosh.
You might, but given your endo and the scar tissue from the surgeries, because at this point I've had like 5 different surgeries. They said you could get an ectopic pregnancy, but because of the sepsis and everything, the chances of you even surviving if there was an ectopic said it would take you and the baby. Mm. And I was like, so then I'm basically choosing potential babies or life. And right. I did. I went back and forth because I really wanted babies. It was tough. Yeah. But in the end, it was, you know, watching my nephew clean the IVs from my arms and my yeah. sister, my mom, everything. I chose life because I knew what that would do to them if I wasn't here.
All right, friends, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Holly for sharing her story, sending her so much love. I know that was painful to recall a lot of it, but I'm so glad she did. So you guys can remember to advocate for yourself and listen to your own body and keep asking questions. Don't forget to grab the full 3-book work of art bundle for just $49 over at infertileafgroup.com, or you can see more on my Instagram at infertileafstories. And if you can think of anyone who could benefit from listening to this podcast or any of the 360 plus others, please pass this along. I just want to reach and help as many people as possible and make it suck less for everybody coming after me. Thanks again for listening. I love you all. Talk to you soon.